Welcome to Season 2 of Beyond the Wall, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast brought to you by Istral and Darknotch. We'd like to thank FFG and CardGameDB for their continued support, and the fantastic AGOT community as a whole for being the sole reason we do this cast. Thank you for letting us take you once again beyond the wall.
Today we're going to be having a quick intro, then we're going to talk about some world news, some 2.0 news, and an exclusive spoiler. Then we're going to be joined by JC Wama to talk attachments in the current meta, and then some closing comments.
John, this is episode 18, and this may be the week in Game of Thrones with the most news ever.
It's been crazy.
I mean, it was full last week. This week, there's so much news that we're not even going to go over most of it in the intro. I mean, there was the Worlds article edit, the 2.0 at Worlds article, the Team Covenant interview about Worlds. There was the Game of Thrones 2.0 article. There was a spoiler in Team Covenant. Tons and tons of stuff. We'll leave that to the following segments because we discuss it later. But there's actually even some other stuff.
Like?
The Quillen Tankard's regulars are announcing that they're coming back.
No one cares about them. There's some guy called Alex on that group.
I was not a part of them, and then they asked me if I would be an honorary member. I have no idea what that means, and I said,
and you
yes.
Thought,
that
was you thought, yeah, I don't have enough Game of Thrones work, so what I'm going to do is heap some more on top.
But for those of you who don't know who these people are,
they're the rules lawyers.
And they did quite a few articles in 1.0 about some of the trickier situations, and they say they've got some 2.0 stuff to share.
Why? There'll be no point to have them in 2.0 because the rules are going to be done well.
Did you see they posted their first article and somebody said that comment, basically. Huh? And then I wrote like two pages
that person's
in reply.
Right. Well, you were wrong and that person was right.
Other news. There was the official announcement that the last chapter pack came out. I still don't have my hands on it yet, but I have a feeling that I'm going to be more than somewhat sad when I actually hold that last chapter pack in hand.
You know, I'm missing the last four.
I'm missing the last three because I order them from a store online sometimes. And
I've just been borrowing my cards.
Yeah, well, I can't bear the notion of not having the complete collection. I mean, I'm this close, I got to finish it off.
All right.
Other news from this week. The annals broke because there were too many entries again.
Well, it seems like you have to move from something other than a giant Google Excel spreadsheet.
I was able to fix it. I think there's still another 5 or 6 weeks of data room now in it. I trimmed a whole bunch of cells because it was actually a cell limit, and I've sort of made it a little more efficient. But yeah, in the long term, this is not – it's not going to work for 2.0. It's not going to work with the level of submissions. And really, I need help with that because I could do. I have some basic programming experience, but not.
So what you're saying is, if there's a programmer out in the community that wants to program the annals with specs from you, they should contact beyondthewall@gmail.com and write to us, and we'll send them a full set of our alt art cards as a thank you for doing that work.
Speaking of which, we've mentioned them for a while. We actually have them now, don't we?
I do. I got full 12 sets printed, and not only did we get them printed, but Richard, the gentleman that's doing our printing, lightened them a bit because some of them are really dark and it was hard to see the great art these artists did for us, and they are just so snappy now. It's incredible.
Now, we do have some backlog of people that had reached out to us that we'll be contacting as well to give out some of these sets. Hopefully, we'll still have a few more to discuss on the cast and see if we can find a way to engage listeners.
But we definitely will have some at Gen Con. So be prepared for that, people.
Speaking of listener engagement, I probably am not even allowed to say this on the cast, John. You're going to frown at me for it. I am wondering if there's any of our listeners who would like to partner with me for the fellowship event for Lord of the Rings on Sunday at Gen Con.
On Sunday?
Yeah, so all the Throne stuff is out of the way. I want to try the Lord of the Rings, the fellowship event.
What time is it at?
It's at 10.
And when does it end?
It's 2 hours, so.
Well, I'm in.
You're in? Okay, well,
yeah. Give me a Lord of the Rings deck.
All right, well, then I'll pick
You're leaving on the same flight as me, right?
Yeah, I'm leaving on the same flight as you.
All right, I'm in.
All right, listeners just lost out. They weren't quick enough.
Damn.
Finally, there have been, as I mentioned previously, well, last week, there were a ton of regionals this weekend. I only have the results of a few of them. I know, John, you have the results of a few of them. Do you want to start us off?
Yeah, Salim beat me in the final in Gatineau Regional. He was playing Stark Bear Island, and I was playing a Greyjoy Live 2 deck.
Live 2 deck did fairly well elsewhere.
Yeah, very similar deck. I think there's about 5 or 6 cards different. Raul took down his tournament in Spain with it, in Madrid, I think.
Yeah, although Aoria did seed top of Swiss with Lani No Agenda, surprising no one. Greyjoy was able to take the tournament there as well. I've got news out of Louisville, Kentucky. I don't have much information. I know that a Greyjoy the old way with Longship Maiden's Bane, played by someone called Rob, actually played by two people called Rob, but only one of them won, took that. I know that
Frenchhorn Mikey went to that that regional. He went 3-1 and actually called the judge over to take that loss. So he was actually going to be 4-0, but took a loss because he felt that he cheated in his game, where he used To the Spear on the Viper twice early on in the match, and then realized when he was going to use the third one on him that he was immune to events, so he gave the game to his opponent.
There's also a regional in France, in Lille, that was won. I don't have many details. I know who won. I know Marteau won the Joust and the overall. I know Book won the Melee. I have the breakdown of the houses. Surprisingly, 11 out of 27 players were playing Martell. That's a truckload of Martell.
I hear Martell's good.
But I don't know whether... Statistically, I guess Martell won that, but I don't actually know whether Martell was playing Martell. I do have information also out of the Missouri Regional, in the Springfield, Missouri Regional. I know that Mark Downing took that with a Greyjoy deck. I don't actually know what agenda he was using. I didn't get that information yet. I do know that there were 2 Targ Summer Dothraki decks in the top 4, which is kind of neat.
That's a solid deck.
It is. It is. But it's fun to see. I mean, no one would have said that 2 years ago.
Yeah. DC Regional is happening still right now. The top 4 is going on. DC Dennis just dropped to go feed his dog, who had given Dave the win, which looks like it's going to be a Dave Stroms versus Seth Booth final.
Isn't that a rematch?
I think so, and I think Seth is actually playing HOD Bane, and Dave is playing his Lannister Conquest Targaryen.
All right, well, this is happening live, but obviously it won't be live by the time you're listening to it, so. Yeah. I have no news out of Italy or the Adelaide regional in Australia, and I don't have any information of the Chilean regional yet, but people have been really good about submitting stuff to the annals, you know, after the fact in the week after, and so I'm sure we'll get some data from some of those over the next couple of days.
We're joined today by the IGOT player with the largest underpants in the whole world. Just wanted to throw that out there so everyone knows. So for those that don't know, this is Jacob, and he's an international sensation in my mind.
That seems like it could entail a whole lot of things. He's a Stalic champion. He's a member of what we've now been calling the best meta in the world, although the Dutch are seeming to overtake you guys. What do you say to that, Swedes?
Well, the Dutch, they're very good. I'll give them that. Although they come to us for deck advice all the time.
The Dutch are not Swedish. Like, I don't even know why we're talking about this, Alex.
What we were going to talk about today, aside from the size of people's underpants, was this week's announcement or announcements about Worlds. And it's worth noting that we won't go over all the minor details for all the different games, but they posted this and then they fixed the schedule because the prelims for Melee and Joust weren't there and only the finals were on the days after. Then they added an article for 2.0 to say that it was going to happen. Then they changed the schedule to move the draft finals off from the Sunday. Then they added a Melee second edition event on the Sunday. This was not the smoothest rollout for an announcement.
Like, seriously, FFG, you guys are supposed to be good at this by now.
I think there was a thread on Card Game DB where someone was, or not just someone, a lot of people were really, really upset about that there wasn't a 2.0 tournament at all. And then it was, and people were like, oh yeah, I think they're listening to us. I just think that they're really bad at putting this out.
Yes, I think they probably had that planned. They didn't.
Who checks that stuff? They need someone that reviews their schedule and says, obviously, like, you have finals, but no beginning of the games.
Yeah, they should hire you, Alex, or something.
They can't afford me.
Yeah.
But there's some pretty big news. Like, Worlds is 5 days? 5 days? I'm never going to be able to go to Worlds. I can't take a whole week off work. That's nuts.
I know, it's crazy. I was really excited about going to Worlds. Seriously, I am planning on going to Worlds for the first time this year, trying to get some Swedish people to go. And that was for the first announcement. That was even without 2.0. I was like, yeah, I'm going to go do the 3 days with Draft, Joust, and Melee. And obviously, I wanted to go for the whole Worlds, but this is a lot. I don't think I can make it for a full week, even with work and everything. This is crazy.
Well,
yeah, it's a mistake.
It is a mistake. I agree wholeheartedly. But first of all, the reasoning for this is pretty clear. It's the idea that there's only so many people they can fit in the hall, so they're trying to spread the number of days. And I think that is the wrong call to make. I think that what they really needed to do is say, we're going to have an AGOT Worlds weekend or an LCG Worlds weekend and separate it from the miniatures games. Because this is stretched over too long. It's too much.
They should have broken it up for sure.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if you think about it, it's basically what you're saying, Alex, is that this is already an AGOT weekend, but it's also everything else. It's just that you can't do everything separately. You have to decide if you want to play AGOT, that's what you're going to play, but it's just simultaneously as everything else.
Yeah, now it just happens to be 5 days.
Yeah.
I don't know. It seems like a big mistake. Now, they did announce some really positive things in my mind too. Right? They upped their swag, which sounds great. They're charging a little bit more.
The deck boxes look really nice. I think it's hilarious that I think the X-Wing and Armada players and Imperial Assault players are getting a deck box. Sort of like a subtle hint. It's like, you know what games you should be playing?
Yeah. But, I mean, they upped their prize support by upping the cost a little bit. And I think that's fine because so many people are traveling for this. Adding a couple bucks to the entry fee should be a non-issue because you're paying so much for your flight or your travel plus your room. A couple extra bucks on entry seems reasonable.
There are other nice things that they said. And I'm not just saying this because it would include me, because it won't this year, but they seem to be making a real effort to promote past champions and regional winners and so on to show up, at least by making it appear like a higher prestige event. And is that going to stop somebody else from signing up? No. Is that going to make more of the regional winners signing up? It's probably not going to make the difference. It does give this perception, though. It says, like, this is the event for these people, and other people can go if there's room. And it's kind of neat to have that perception, I think.
So I'm interested, mainly from an egoistic part of side of this, is they said that they were going to reserve spots for the regional champions from the US and the world champions and some national champions, depending on if the distributor in that country was in on it. And I actually sent out an email to FFG's organized play to see if this includes the European championship, obviously.
They have to. I mean, they may not have thought about it, but they have to.
Yeah, I agree. They would just have to.
I hope so, for me at least.
But it is odd that they mentioned that the North American regionals get that priority, but regionals elsewhere do not. Do you know if Sweden is sending their national champion there this year?
Sweden is not sending their champion. It's really weird. We have this distributor who, by the way, they're really great. They do a lot of things for the community, but I don't think they've realized how big AGOT is going to be with 2.0. It's not been that huge in Scandinavia compared to, let's say, Netrunner or X-Wing, who we have, like, I mean, I don't know, 150 really, like, players who play competitively in Netrunner, for example. And so they send from Scandinavia. We have our Nordics in August. They send the winners for Netrunner and X-Wing, like they did last year. They're not sending for any other games.
Well, AGOT 2.0 will teach them a lesson.
Yeah.
It'll happen.
I hope so.
Since we're talking about distributors and stores right now, one of the other cool things they did with the prize support is this change that the World Champion store gets a whole bunch of swag, right? They get free kits for the rest of the year.
Oh, yeah. Like two store championships and
all the summer
regional kits. Yeah.
Yeah.
That is great. Yeah, because banner, it also gets the store involved and invested as well, which I think is very important to maintaining a player base in a store and having a favorite location, and there's that sort of association. There is one last thing that I think is a little difficult, and that is the timing. Not of the World's Event itself. Obviously, I love to go to Minnesota in November, but of the pre-registration. It's really early.
Yeah. Yep. You need to know way in advance.
And that seems like it's not necessary. I mean, I know they need to order t-shirts for people based on the right sizes and things like that. But do you really need a 4-month lead up, a 5-month lead up to get that kind of stuff lined up? I think that's a mistake. I think it should be after Gen Con that you open up registration.
I think this might be tying into what we said about that they want to try and make this look very exclusive. Mm-hmm. So that by in June, when the pre-registration opens for all the winners, and then for everyone else, it's kind of like, yeah, you get to do this early. Otherwise, you might not be there. And then if the spots still don't fill up for the winners, they open up after, I think, middle of August sometime, they said, mm-hmm. for the tickets for the regional and North American champions who did not apply. But it seems weird. It seems like, oh, we're opening up pre-registration. Oh, we're not filling up the spots. We're opening up again. And then, well, we don't know if they even fill up in June.
Yeah, I guess maybe it's for the appearance of exclusivity, but that seems to be.
And it's, I mean, sure, a lot of the national championships that the different countries have are definitely after this registration. They're usually in August and so on until maybe even late October. It makes it a little bit all over the place, I think.
They continue to improve all sorts of things. I really hope that next year they split up events by game or game type, and that they mm-hmm. bring the announcement more. I mean, I can sort of see why not, because they're probably trying to break down so organized play seasons are the same across all their games, store championship season, regional season, national season, and then worlds, which gives you a fairly small period in which to do worlds. But I don't know if that's really advantageous. You know, does the X-Wing store championship season really need to line up with the Conquest?
I don't think so. I mean, to me, it doesn't.
Not really.
I mean, you could say that you try and make the worlds for all their Star Wars games happen on May the 4th, and you try and make the worlds for all the, you know, other LCGs or for Netrunner happen on some day. I don't know what would be cyberpunky. And then, you know, the AGOT one could be when winter is coming. It could be in November. That would be fine.
Yeah, it sounded a little bit from Horvath when you listened to the interview with Team Covenant that they were a bit hinting about maybe we'll do it next year or maybe we'll split it up. I think it's all about resources from them as well. They're maybe not prepared for having 4 or 5 Gens in a row in late autumn. I don't know.
Maybe I'm really wrong on this, but it would seem to me easier to manage 5 300-person events than 1,500-person event.
Yeah,
because you can use the same staff over the 5 weeks, and you learn from the mistakes of the previous week, and your
get really
cafeteria
good at
is
that.
Used every weekend for a different event, rather than being only 1 week and then turn. You know, I would assume it's easier to break it up.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right.
It does mean that it might stress the staff a bit, right? Like, you know, telling your staff that you'll be working the next 5 or 6 weekends in a row, all for, you know, full days, could be tough.
That's the point.
You know, we talked a lot about the stuff they did do for Worlds, but there was a couple things mentioned that they said they were never going to do or not. One of them was cash prizes. They kind of talked about Magic and how Magic gives out cash prizes in other games and how they're not going to do that. They're not interested in monetizing the game because they want it to be focused on the fun and not make it a job.
I'm wholeheartedly behind that. I think cash prizes is a terrible idea. Can't agree with them more.
I think that's a start of down. Yeah, I think that's start of a downhill spiral. It would probably mean higher prices for the chapter packs. It would probably mean, just in general, more focused on getting more money from the games, aka the customers.
But even if it's just more of a fee for the regional, and then there's prize support at the end, I think the right to make this as level a playing field as possible and involve money beyond that sort of base investment in getting the cards as little as possible.
Yeah. So I was at a regional yesterday, and a bunch of people were actually upset about that. They actually like these big events that offer some form of cash prize or incentive to competitive players, is what they said. And I said to them, well, you know, there's a level of competition in Game of Thrones and the other LCGs that FFG puts out. But I think they've always been really clear at where that line is in the competitive, that this game is more for casual players. This game is more for people that are competitive, but they aren't dicks. Because as soon as you start pumping money and having to have – some people make it their job, and I think they actually said that in their interview. And some people – obviously, people become a lot more serious about it.
People cheat.
People cheat. They take their losses more. You know, they're like, oh, my God, I missed that trigger, and they're torn up about it.
And this is maybe off topic, but it's I feel like the whole community of AGOT has always been a bit more familiar, always been a bit more friendly than pretty much any other community that I've been to when it comes to games, because of the casual side of the game.
I'd like to say it's because we're better people, but I'm not entirely sure that's true. I think it's just that the environment in which we meet is not as destructive. I mean, we're there. We're able to all go out for beers afterwards or during, as the case may be. You know, I think that's all an important part of maintaining that. And I think you're probably slightly less likely to go out for a beer with someone who didn't let you take back a trigger that then lost you $2,000 than you are to just someone who beat you at a regional. And there's one other thing they mentioned that they weren't doing, and I know opinions are somewhat divided on this, and this is a ranking system. I don't know if you guys heard Steve Horvath sort of say that he didn't want this. And I know that there's some people who feel otherwise. This was debated as well on the other cast. So what are your guys' thoughts on that?
I think it's a little bit of a backtrack for them, because didn't they come out with the Hall of Heroes or whatever it was for a while, which was basically a way to appreciate past champions and the best players in the game? That went on for a couple months, and I think they just stopped.
There are two sides of this. I think it's a bit sad that they won't. And I'm not saying this because I have won anything. I'm saying this that it's a bit sad that they won't show the champions and do the interviews the way that they did before. Because at least for me, when I started the game, I looked at the interviews with John Bruno, with Greg Atkinson, and I really, really liked, and I really had, I had a role model when it comes to this game of how to play. I looked at their deck list and I tried to figure out why are they just including one copy of that great card and not three and things like that. And I think that they should go back to. But I can also understand why they are not doing kind of the statistics with the top of the and that you would gather points, etc. I can see why they won't do that, because it would favorize some people. It would favorize the people who go to a lot of events and you would get points. And I think it would be difficult to keep track of that and make it just.
I also think that it risks becoming also a wall of shame. Right?
Yeah.
If someone is in an ELO rating drops below 1,000, you're like, well, then they're a loser. And that's not something you want to encourage, even the perception of at any time. And I also don't think that there's that much to be gained by ranking players. I think
people know who they think the good players are, and I think that's more important than, like, if they have friends or people they respect that they seek, you know, deck advice from, or it gets around, right? Like, this guy's really friendly. He'll help. I know John Bruno helps people with their decks all the time. So I don't think the community – right now we're small enough that we don't need some way of identifying people. You're going to see those faces at the tournaments.
There's another consideration too, which is, does it constrain you if you have a rating system? Do you say, you know, I'm 1850 ranked and there's a store championship coming up. Well, I guess I better bring my tier one, you know – Melt's Faces deck instead of the deck I want to play.
Yeah. You can't take anything for fun.
Yeah, it takes...
You can, but it costs you rating, and people are less likely to do that. So I think that's
harmful as well. Yeah, it might take the focus from the fun part of the game as well.
I wouldn't do it. Like, I wouldn't be able to hurt my rating by playing for fun at a regional or a store championship. And right now, sometimes I go to regionals and store champions with a deck that I'm just going to have. I think, you know, it's a good deck. I don't play bad decks, but I play a deck that might not be my best deck because it's more fun.
I really like the way that our friend James, JC Wama, his way of playing tournaments, especially with store championships and regionals. He goes to a lot of them. The first one, he plays his best deck. If he wins, he plays janky fun decks at the rest of them. Not bad decks, but decks that he maybe doesn't think he can win with, but that's really fun.
HOD Highgarden. I still can't believe he won any games with that. He made the cut with that.
He definitely needs to prove what that deck can do.
Out of curiosity, do either of you currently play a game in which there's a ranking system, be it online, a computer game, be it, you know, chess, Dota, StarCraft?
Currently,
I don't know.
I used to.
And Jacob?
I have been on and off with Hearthstone.
Okay.
Which kind of has a ranking system.
And how does ranking system affect your play, if at all? I don't know if...
It definitely affects it negatively because I've stopped playing because of it. I feel like I'm not sure if it's just the ranking or if it's that it's so many random people that I don't know. I don't know the player I'm playing against. But I feel like for me, it was a hunt for higher levels. And I wanted to build janky decks, and I just realized that I get to this high level, and then like I'm good now, and then I build another deck, and then I go down to I play with a janky deck. Mm-hmm. So negatively, definitely.
Yeah, that's sort of my idea as well. I said, all right, well, so Jakob, you mentioned you're planning on heading to Worlds this year, if you can.
Oh yeah, yes, excellent. I am.
I mean, it will be great. It doesn't matter that it's over. If you can make all of the 5 days, this is going to be the first 2.0 big constructed event with multiple boxes.
Winner design.
Chapter packs. The winner still gets to design a card, even if they don't get to be called World Champion.
Oh yeah, what do you think about that, guys? How's that going to work?
That's fine.
So that would mean the winner of World Champion, what is it going to say on the card? The winner of the world championship, but not world champion?
Well, that might be you.
Then it should just be, say, designed by Giant Underpants.
Oh, yeah.
I have a sneaking suspicion they might not allow that.
Attachment? Girdle. We're joined by the Tasmanian Devil. The Australian reigning champion, Justin.
Hey, gents, how are you? Nodgy?
He's not Alex. The Australian reigning champion.
He is, actually.
What? I thought the champion was Tom.
No, Tom got overall, but Tom didn't win anything, unfortunately for Tom.
No, but that's a great thing. People who win overall are better than people who win things, right?
No. Oh, you know what? Actually, this time Alex is correct.
And
so this has been a week of some... Well, again, they seem to be just churning out the spoilers for 2.0, and this week we have a couple of things to talk about. The first is of the many things we have to talk about, there's the article by FFG, and we're referring to the Battle for the Throne article, because by the time you listen to this, they keep churning one out every Monday, there's a decent chance you'll have seen the next one they alluded to. They also, this week, Team Covenant spoiled a card, as well as seem to sort of offhandedly refer to some really important information about the game. And on top of that, we have our own exclusive spoiler. So where would you like to start, Justin?
Well, we should probably talk the article first and make people wait for the spoiler.
I wholeheartedly support that.
For the record, I guess I want to give the listeners the spoiler right away. But, you know, since you guys said that, we'll do the article.
The fake nice guy. Oh, it's because these other guys are helping me back.
Good cop. Two bad cops.
So did anything jump out at you guys from the article specifically?
For our listeners that might not have had the time to read this article because there's been so much news, this one's called Battle for the Throne, and it's basically where they go through a challenge phase for dummies. And they explain in the 2.0 all the little things that a challenge phase entails, and they explain the icons and costs and strengths and factions, and then they actually show, you know, I think they use some made-up person, we'll call him Alex, So Alex is playing House Lannister and all the little things he does. I think it's actually Jake they use.
But it's Jake and Melody.
Yeah. I think there were a couple of things that people were talking about that were new rules-wise. The first is they actually confirm that you lose all your golden taxation, because that's been this sort of persistent rumor that taxation might have changed a lot. That is one of the ways people think they can play high gold characters. It turns out you lose all your golden taxation. Dominance still seems to work the same way as well. And as far as I can tell, the challenges seem to work basically the same. They use the word initiate instead of declare. That's as far as I got.
I didn't even notice that, Alex.
I didn't notice any of that either, I have to say. What I did notice is how annoying the tickler is going to be in three times core set only play.
Well, he's going to be completely useless at the Gen Con tournament, right? If the absolutely cards are one of it, if you're only playing, it's going to be awful.
But when people are playing three cores, he is going to be so annoying for a good 2 or 3 months, and then probably not so annoying anymore.
It's rolling a lot of dice, right? It's a little gamble each time.
Well, he's also looks like efficient Judd, because it's a 2 for a 2 by icon. 2 for 2?
Yeah, it's good like icons.
Well, if you compare him to what people seem to be paying here, I mean, Vanguard of the North is a 4 for 4 with one icon and a fairly uninteresting text. So 2 for 2 with a bicon seems great.
Yeah, but you still have to kneel him if you want to use his ability, which means you didn't use him in challenges. So.
That's true.
I guess we should talk about his ability so people know what we're talking about, right? He's an ally. He's 2 cost, like we said, 2 strength, military and intrigue icon, and he has a dominant action. It says, kneel the tickler to discard the top card from an opponent's deck. Then you may choose 1 copy of that card and discard it from play.
Now, I was going to correct you because you said dominant action instead of dominance, but for the tickler, it's probably fitting. I guess I can think of some other... Thinking of that ability just as you read it, maybe it's a little better in melee? When you're more likely to have another copy of, like, an ROC or whatever on the board?
No, right. I think it's probably less good in melee, to be honest, because if melee follows the same pattern as Joust does, as melee does now, there are so few turns in a melee game that, realistically, are you going to want to keep the tickler up and kneeling, and he might get to trigger once or maybe twice in a game, so he's pretty unlikely to hit anything, I think.
One thing, when I first started playing Thrones, I actually played melee with just core sets. And one thing I found was that the melee games took forever, way slower. So, you know, in the low card environment, those melee games might actually go 3 and 4 rounds instead of 1 or 2. There's less ways to rush. And, so he might have more value early in the game and then become less useful as more and more cards are introduced to the pool and melee becomes more faster paced.
Yeah, absolutely.
Although it was mentioned on, and this is not an original idea, on the other podcast this week, that there was a card spoiled, Baron the Maiden Fair, that lets you stack an opponent's deck. So this could potentially combo in a probably not very card efficient way, but, you know, if you get a 7-coster, I guess it's worth it. One of the other things that sort of jumped out at me is that both Rob and Eddard are reusable characters, which I think is really important if you're going to push high gold characters. I think you need action economy on them to make them worthwhile.
Yeah. Same reason why Princess of the Sun Viper is so amazing in the current Joust format is because when he's doing work, he's doing at least 3 things a turn, and so it's a pretty good investment. I mean, part of the reason, but it's a pretty good investment.
And so in the same way, these also both have renown, so if you can get multiple challenges out of them, you're accelerating very, very quickly.
So I think for our newer listeners, it's good to define action economy, and that's exactly what Alex was alluding to, the ability to use a character multiple times in either challenges or in some other way.
Any card, right.
Yeah.
Caitlin, well, I know a lot of people have mentioned that this is basically a Brienne, but without the military icon, so she doesn't cancel saves. But to me, the 7 trait really jumps out at me.
Yeah, I expect... See, it's really hard to tell from what we've seen so far. It's either a case of they're going to use the 7 as a generic trait that covers, you know, things like Sept and whatnot. and in that way have fewer traits. But on the, it's really difficult to know if that's the case or if the seven is just another example of, you know, storyteller or master of ships that has bled across to 2.0.
Well, I was thinking, first of all, I'm not sure it's – I mean, I realize Caitlin does, you know, pray a couple of times in the books and so on. I don't know if she's any more devout than anybody else. Maybe.
No, definitely not. And I guess her quirk is that she keeps worshipping the Seven even though she's in the North.
Yeah, and I think that might actually make her more devout because other people will adopt the North's way, right, while she sticks to her guns and stays worshipping.
And raises her daughters to keep that in mind, so Sansa does as well. But so is this an attempt to sit in for a Holy Crest because they're not using crests?
Well, and that's what I'm wondering.
Oh, I hope not.
Well,
I wouldn't go that far to the Holy Crest world, right? Holy Crest before in 1.0 I see as priests or like crazy devoted followers.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I also think that it becomes really hard if you want like the Ironborn to say, I guess, the Drowned God and Northerners to say the Old Gods as their trait.
Hmm.
And
yeah, no, I kind of agree. The Rhoynar
could worship the river. So how do you make a plot like Power of Faith that gives all the Seven, comma, the Drowned God, comma, the Old Gods, comma,
they should have just done like devoted or something as a trait, right, if that's what they were trying to do.
Or maybe this is design space. Print, instead of one, Power of Faith, you have four.
Oh, that's right.
And each one does something slightly different because the gods were different.
Maybe.
I mean... Yeah. We're already printing for 8 different factions instead of 6. I don't know if we need 4 different faiths within that as well.
You mean 5?
Five, Red God, Drowned God, Old Gods, Many Faced God, and the Seven.
Wow, Many Faced. Yeah. Okay,
there we are.
Other things.
Lannister jumped out saying that some of the stuff that we're used to Lannister doing seems to be back again in 2.0. Cersei's raising in claim. Lannister's always been known for its intrigue, and we got some plus gold on their characters as well. Another, you know, thing we know Lannister for currently.
Well, first of all, I wonder about the art, because it actually seems like of all the cards, I quite like the art. You know, sometimes it's different style and whatever, but I don't like that Tywin or that Cersei very much.
Oh, no, I don't like that Cersei at all.
I hate the Lannister art so far. Tywin with his filthy mutton chops is like, hey, look over there.
And that's right. Hey, look at Cersei, because she's just as bad.
Because they're in a room. What is he pointing at?
Well, the maester and the other guy are like, oh, Tywin's on one of his rants again.
Is he trying to send someone out of the room, maybe? I don't know.
Maybe this is where he sends Joffrey to bed. You're very tired, Joffrey. Go to your room.
Go to your room. There's not that much there. Obviously, there are these cards, and that's 6 new cards that we didn't have. But there's not all that much in the way of new mechanics or anything else. But, John, I figured you'd mention that Vanguard of the North, because we were talking about interaction with plot traits, and we're already seeing that on cars. We saw that on Naval Superiority, the plot that we got to spoil.
Yep.
We got to, you know, sort of think that maybe kingdom plots are high gold, and now we get to see cards that interact with the war trait.
Yeah, it's a very cool card, actually. The fact that they have the ability to interact with a trait on a plot makes me excited, because it means those other traits are probably important.
Well, let's hope.
Yeah.
Or I'm we'll hoping. Get a plot that says storyteller or master of ships.
Yeah.
I want them to proliferate Master of Ships in 2.0.
How many different Master of Ships have there been in the books?
I think.
Was but, you know, we can have ships?
Multiple copies of those two guys.
We could have, Orrain Waters, and then another Orrain Waters, because he's such a key character in the story.
Just runs away with, what, Queen Cersei, the warship?
Yeah, steals all their ships, becomes a pirate.
It's pretty good, although, you know, pointless introduction of a character, but yeah.
Mm.
So maybe then we'll move on to possibly the most exciting character that has been spoiled in the last week.
Yeah, absolutely. And
this is Varys on Team Covenant. Does someone want to read that one out?
All right. Varys is a 6 coster with a single intrigue icon, 3 strength. He's got the keyword stealth. He's a lord. He's a small council and a sly. I love how he's a small council, sorry. He is an interrupt. When the dominance phase ends, remove Varys from the game to discard each character from play.
And the flavor text. Why is it always the innocents who suffer most when you High Lords play the Game of Thrones?
Well, I think he's super interesting.
Yeah, he's Westeros Bleeds in a character, and he'll probably go a long way into allowing some resets in the environment. But 6 cost to Westeros Bleeds, without knowing the economy, it just feels expensive.
Well, he does, but what you'll probably find is, even if he's not super useful immediately, he'll probably become useful as what inevitably seems to happen is over time with these games, the economy base becomes more and more efficient, and so 6 cost becomes relatively smaller than it might have been at the start. So it may be a case of he's really expensive now, but down the track he'll be relevant. Also point out that Lord trade is relevant in terms of his cost too, because of that plot that was spoiled that reduces Lords by 2.
So yeah,
so he can be a little bit cheaper, or you know, you could build your plot deck with that in mind.
I was just gonna say, I think it's the threat of activation. It's even more so than the Westeros Bleeds or whatever it is. It's as soon as you put this guy on the board, your opponent changes the way he marshals. He changes the way he plays. He changes the way he interacts with you, because
he kills Varys instead of some other character to make sure he can't do the reset.
Well, seen much targeted kill either. I also thought it's really interesting because he has some text that I did not expect to see in the core set, where we expect that they're simplifying terms, and here we have remove Varys from the game.
I hate it. Well, I hate that so much.
I assume the goal is so that you're not recycling from discard, and yet you get to use him more than once because he's not in your
I assume pile. That's the goal. But you know what I would much rather is a little bit of clever design around recursion. I think probably don't build heaps of recursion into your game, or if you do, then make decisions around. Like, as far as I know, we're not moving to a disordered discard pile, but having all your recursion effects randomly pull or take the top card rather, so it's, you know, it's much harder to sort of, you know, just grab Varys or whatever.
It's a different kind of card advantage, but it's not targeted. Yeah, it's not like.
Yeah, I hate the idea of cards removing from the game, or these bizarre areas that are out of play, but they're still sort of in play because where do you put your Varys?
Yeah, you forget. you forget to put them back in.
Yeah, I'm not a fan, but nonetheless, I do like that he's harder to recur. That I'm in favor of, but I don't like the solution.
Are people going to put this guy in their deck if they're not looking for his ability? I don't think so. So I can't see anyone running 3 of him unless they're really hoping to trigger that ability early game at some point to clear the board.
Well, it kind of depends on how easy he is to kill in between the marshalling phase and the dominance phase. Like, if there is a heap of kill effects in 2.0, then he's going to be pretty terrible. But he's pretty safe, or burn, yeah. If he's pretty safe on the table, then I expect he's going to be really, really annoying, at least until he's no longer safe.
Yeah, eventually they'll be targeted kill. Or maybe they'll be small council hate.
There should be the way that they...
I was going to say they probably should be, yeah.
A Cersei that slowly kills off the council.
Yeah, sacrifice a small council member every phase or whatever.
Yeah.
The small council is getting smaller.
It's getting smaller.
That's right.
Perfect.
I'm also intrigued by the decision to put this kind of board wipe effect on a character, rather than the obvious thing to do would have been to make a Westeros Bleeds that cost, I don't know, 4 gold in the dominance phase and wipes the board. Is this because they're trying to promote characters more? Is this because this is, you know, a really Nedley nod to Varys? I actually think it is quite good.
I think they're trying to control resets to some extent. I think Justin had it when they said, you know, it depends. His strength is going to depend on how easy it is to keep him on the board until dominance. So I think putting that effect in a character is probably easier to manage from a design perspective than it is in a Westeros Bleeds card, which all you have to do is protect that one card in your hand.
Yeah, there's no question of that. And 6 gold is pretty expensive for a character that obviously doesn't have the body of a 6 gold character or the abilities of a 6 gold character except for his wipe effect. I think they need to be very, very careful with how they do these things, because I think resetting in general and the ease that you remove characters from the table is a core part of Thrones 1.0. So I'm hoping that that flavor will translate across. I'm quite worried about it, and I'm hopeful that that means that Maris is pretty safe on the table, at least in this environment for now.
Now, in the video, they sort of offhandedly mention, and I don't know if you guys caught this in listening to the video.
Yeah, I think I know what you're about to say.
Yeah, that they mentioned that since we know there's no Valor, and I've sort of dug into this because I'm not sure I believe it, and it seems like the common argument is that the plots are alphabetical, and we've seen the Winds of Winter and Wildfire in that order. It's clearly Winds of Winter, W-I-N, and then Wildfire. So it's being sort of as T, not W, sorry. So if the plots are alphabetical, and they weren't all alphabetical, and sometimes cards have gone completely not, several products and thrones, but so far they all have been, there's no room for Valor.
Yeah, this is kind of interesting, I think. As you know, people who are in the Skype group probably are aware, I'm not a fan of the idea that there'll be no Valor. So I'm, of course, holding out hope that Team Covenant either have been amiss in their detective work, or that they haven't accidentally spoiled something that they weren't supposed to spoil just yet. But I guess the thing is, the board wipe Valor may not be called Valor anymore. It could be called, it could be something like the Red Wedding. So, I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean there's no equivalent effect. I would very strongly hope that there is, and I'm sure we can talk about the reasons for that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I agree with you.
Makes me nervous, though.
I have never played in a Thrones environment without Valor, and while I've included Valor in fewer and fewer decks recently, I think that's partly because the meta has progressed and partly because I have an interest in making that work. But to me, Valor is such a linchpin in making the intrigue challenge meaningful. It's such a linchpin in making long-term planning, the plot game in general, meaningful.
Yeah.
And such a linchpin in keeping the game unstable.
Yeah, yeah. I agree. I think it's as important to Thrones. I mean, and again, I want to stress what we're talking about here. We're not talking about Valor the card, but Valor the effect and what it does in terms of the pacing of the game. For me, the most important, it does a lot of subtle things, but it punishes overextension really badly. So it's a comeback mechanic in that sense, in that if you overextend, your opponent plays Valor, they have a window to get back into the game, which I think is really important. Mm-hmm. It absolutely makes the intrigue challenge much more important, although to some extent the reserve value probably does that too, by limiting what you can keep into your hand. But I think that's only important if you can also clear the board really easily. In terms of the flavor of the game, I think Valor also characterizes what the Thrones card game is about. Like, you can't rely on your stuff sticking around, which I think is really important. And as you say, Alex, fewer and fewer decks need to play it nowadays. I think there's definitely much more scope for flexibility in that regard. But having said that, if no deck could play Valor, 1.0 currently would be awful. I don't know if you've tried to remove Valor.
Versus aggro matches are just worth giving up on. Once you have 40 characters on the board, it's just not – there's no – it's making fun. A challenge.
It's not even that, though. I mean, we've got Wildfire. We've got Aftermath. We've got First Snow. We've got Westeros Bleed. So we've
got no aggro deck is going to run a Wildfire.
No, what I mean, though, is like we've got all these non-Valor resets that are not quite the same, that don't have the same effect on the way the game plays. And if you just remove Valor and had all the others, it would still be awful.
We seem to be agreeing, and we should probably bring the counter-arguments.
Just waiting for the two of you to stop having your agree love fest.
All right, John.
But go ahead, John. Finish it up, Alex.
Well, I was going to say that there is the argument that there was a time in Thrones well before I played where Valor is not legal.
Yeah, well,
I cannot
speak
to it at all, so I'm not a good source of information there, and it was a fairly short period of time, and during that time they printed First Snow Winter that killed, discarded all characters with strength 2 or less. It wasn't the same thing as the current version.
I would go with all the people saying that there's not going to be a Valor in the core. I would think there's probably going to be one shortly afterwards, and is that a bad thing? I mean, if it comes out in the first couple chapter packs, I don't think it's going to have a negative effect on the game. So, for me, it's important to have Valor, but with Gen Con not being a competitive tournament, in the normal sense, it's a single box. It's going to actually give 2.0 time to mature a little bit before we're going to see it at Worlds. And even at Worlds, it's not the you know, they're giving a card design and everything. They're giving great prize support for it, but it doesn't seem to be the focus of Worlds this year. It's going to be a full year before, you know, it's officially competitive. And that gives a lot of time for the pool to progress. And Valor is something that new players in general dislike. They don't like that they've invested in this big character, this cool thing, and then it dies right away. They don't realize how important it is to the game because they're not building the decks as efficiently and as effective as seasoned veterans. So I think you're right that it will impede the veteran games if Valor is in the environment. But your new players, it probably won't affect them in the same way that it would affect, you know, me playing you or Alex and I playing or whatever. So for me, you give these newer players time to get used to the game, learn the mechanics, play those big characters that they love, and then 4 or 5 months later when they start to realize, oh, this game, you know, it really needs something, the reset comes and they're like, oh my God, that's exactly what it needed.
Yeah, I hate speculating on this in the sense that come Gen Con we could find out that there actually is a plot and it's called the Red Wedding and it kills all the characters and whatnot. Yeah. And all this could be for nothing. But in terms of all of those comments, and I've heard all of those arguments before, I mean, the starting with Alex's, you know, they had a period without Valor. That was a very, very long time ago. And the entirety of 1.0 has been in a Valor environment, essentially. And you know what, if the reboot, and the, I mean, the aim of the reboot was to clean up the game that we have, to make it more accessible to new players, and I mean, that might fit into your latter comment there, John, but if that's the goal, if making such a fundamental change, I mean, we're already seeing some big changes to the curve, which I'm also quite nervous about. I thought I was getting the same game again, just cleaned up, and now I feel like I might be getting a different game, and I'm not sure how I feel about that. So I'm worried about it from that point of view. But again, you know, like 1.0, if 2.0 was similar enough to 1.0 to be a true, you know, clean-up, reboot, very minor kind of thing, then I think you need Valor. And as you say, it might be coming. But in terms of all of the other comments, where do we start? I guess the first thing is I do think that it's really important to put it into the core if it's going to be a key mechanic of the game on the basis that, you know, new players might not like. I mean, I did because I came from Magic, I guess. So for me, board wipes is just a natural thing that I'm okay with. Mm-hmm. But if a new player picks up the core, they get really into it, and then they go to their first tournament ever, and then someone flips Valor and they go, hang on, this is the game that I'm going to be playing here. I think that is going to be quite jarring for a lot of new players, whereas I'd rather this is the game you're getting. You know, I'd rather the core be a good representation of what you're going to have to live with. And well, so I'm a bit nervous from that point of view.
But there's another concern, which is that, and they've probably alleviated this, they probably fixed this, but if you design the core box and it doesn't have Valor, but you're designing the cards so that they work with Valor, I really, really hope the core box was tested with Valor.
Yeah,
I think that's an incredibly important thing, because sure, maybe, you know, we're playing 7 gold characters for the first couple of months, then Valor comes out and we reevaluate, and we go down from 5 or 6, 7 gold characters to 2 or 3 in our deck, and the economy changes, and you reevaluate the card pool, and you get that sort of LCG feeling. Fine. But I certainly hope that you know that they're still going to have 3 7 gold characters, not 0. You know?
Yeah,
The Valor is not going to completely change the game so that your testing in the core was worthless.
Having said that, I am quite worried about the subtleties of Valor with respect to the new curve. I assume Valor will have to have more gold. Otherwise, you know, a 2 gold Valor when there are no 0-cost characters, for instance, is going to be – and, you know, we don't know what the economy is like, but I assume just for power creep, you know, they'll be winding back the strength of the economy stuff. There'll be fewer options. They don't want to dedicate, you know, 20% of the core box to economy. So I assume that not only are things going to be more expensive, they're going to be harder to play, at least for a short time. And putting in a 2-gold Valor is probably just going to mean that you've got a Valor, but now it's not quite Valor. Now it's more like Aftermath or First Snow, you know, these ersatz Valors that we have in 1.0.
Well, you know, that might actually be the reason they didn't put it. Now that you
perhaps,
mentioned that.
Perhaps, yeah.
Maybe they said, okay, we want Valor to be a 2 or a 3-gold plot, but no one can recover from that currently. You play the Valor and you've committed suicide. So because we can't include the economy in the core to get there, because we don't want to or because we just don't have the card room, we have to delay it. And if that's the case, that's maybe an argument I could get behind.
I mean,
yeah.
All right. Well, to close it all off, we want to, as of course we delayed for as long as possible, we were sent a spoiler that we could release this week after that article had gone up. And it they very specifically said, oh, this should be very fitting. And I think it is, at least by card title. So maybe, Justin, would you care to share this card with our listeners?
Yeah, yeah. So this one's The Wall. So it's a Stronghold of the North. It's 4 cost. And it says each Night's Watch character you control gets +1 strength. It has the forced reaction after you lose an unopposed challenge, Kneel the Wall, and interrupt when the challenge phase ends, Kneel the Wall to gain 2 power for your faction.
And it's Ooh. The wall, and are we beyond it or the opposite? What is the opposite of beyond? Within it, I suppose.
The card art has us looking at the wall, so I think we're beyond the wall.
We're beyond the wall. That is awesome.
That is awesome. Good job, FFG.
4-cost location, though. I mean, that's the first thing. How many 4-cost locations did Saw play in first edition? 1. It was called The Wall. And it was always an HOD location.
Yeah, but not many is the answer. Rhaenys's Hill, I guess.
Yeah. True.
Is this as strong as Rhaenys's Hill? The answer is definitely no.
But we have to look at the new cost curve too, right? Like this is more like a 2 or 3 cost location in the current pool, I would say.
Well, is it really? The gold on the plots seems to be like 0.75 higher in average.
Okay.
So it's like a 3.5 gold location, I guess. I don't know. It's pretty expensive. The effect is not amazing.
Well, the effect is easy.
It's scalable.
Well, yeah, not only does it scale with the more characters you have, but not losing an unopposed challenge. Because clearly, it seems to be pushing a Night's Watch defense theme, and there's been talk about defending the wall. This is the wall, and I guess you're defending it. But if all you have to do is oppose every challenge to gain 2 power a turn, that's going to be a fair trickle of power. Now, you're probably going to want to win the power challenge, otherwise you're not really helping your case.
Having said that, though, like if 4 gold buys you a renowned character, I'd probably rather have the renowned character.
But we haven't seen a 4 gold renowned. The cheapest we've seen is 6, right?
I think that's right, yeah.
Rob Stark.
Don't underestimate the strength boost. Like, those are useful.
Well, we have a 3 gold strength
4 gold, maybe not. But
yeah, we have a 3 gold strength boost in Winterfell Castle, if I remember the card right. And it's
not
that common.
No, it's not.
No, but if it was 1, people would play it. If it was 1 gold.
If it was 1 gold, people would definitely play it. Look, I don't think it's a bad card, and in the core environment, it might be really great. You're right, it's easy to get that 2 power. It's just maybe not so easy to get the spare 4 gold to play the card. Yeah, so we'll see. But it may be that what happens is instead Night's Watch may have ways to cheat it into play, or to find it, or to reduce it, or some such. Maybe, or to stand it. Maybe some of their... could you trigger the interrupt twice if there was... No, probably not, unless there was a way to stand it.
As an interrupt to the challenge's phase ending, that would be really awkward. No, but I mean, if you can stand it, then it doesn't matter if you lost the challenge.
That's true. So they might have a lot of... Like, the current Night's Watch have a lot of interactions with the current wall. So
the characters might actually have it on, like, you know, if you control the wall.
Yeah,
You get another bonus, right? So their standard text might actually be about the wall as well.
Let's be clear. If there isn't something like that, then this is a pretty bad card. But if there is, I mean, it's potentially quite good. So we'll see.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen them try to push defense, and I've made this case before. In this last cycle, they've added a bunch of Stark cards that work a little bit differently. There's one that kills an opponent's character if they haven't declared a military against you, for instance. And these are the kind of cards that can make a defense theme work because it suddenly becomes engaging again. Your opponent has to try to declare challenges. They don't just sit and only declare the ones they're going to win. You know, it changes the order they might have declared challenges. This card seems like a step back there in that all it's making you do is defend challenges.
Indeed, yeah.
We're joined by a guest that when we last heard from him, he was on to decry attachments with us. This is J.C. Walmer or James Walmsley. So you're back. What are you back for?
I'm back to discuss the fact that attachments have magically overnight become amazing and everyone should play them and events are horrible now.
What happened?
I like to give a consistent message.
To be fair, in the last 2 chapter pack reviews, I've made similar comments about event slots diminishing in decks and attachments becoming more prevalent. And to be fair, John, you've said yes both times I said that.
Because I think it's true.
I would actually argue that I think attachments are at the almost the most powerful they've been in the game. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're validated as a card type, but...
What's changed?
Well, James, why don't you start us off on that?
Well, I think one of the big things that obviously needs to be discussed with attachments is obviously they're using up the same deck slots as events are. So as the power of events wanes, the power of attachments waxes and vice versa. One thing we need to look at is what's happened to events. And events have become a lot harder to play recently, or I say recently for the last year or so at this point, because of Harrenhal. Taken time for that to be realized in the meta and for the repercussions to be felt. But I feel this year it has started to be felt in a big way.
So it's not just Harrenhal, it's cancel in general, right? Like, it's dependent how prevalent Greyjoy is. It's maybe
King
of the Isles, maybe people using the new Iron Throne, though I haven't seen that a lot around here. I know there's some use in the UK. And all this leads to, I agree, events not being as good. But I don't think that made Nordrim Patriarch. I don't think that made attachments better. I think it just made events bad enough that they became equal and maybe worse than attachments, which have been staying consistently the same strength.
Yeah, I don't agree. I actually think attachments have been getting better, mostly because they've stopped costing you cards. There are quite a few cards in this last cycle that have boosted attachments tremendously, and the first example I'd like to talk about is Braided Warrior. Braided Warrior is a card that you play him, and you get a free card for it. You get to search your deck for that card, and so that's already a huge advantage. Of many, I think James has a couple other lined up.
Well, there's the Dothraki that lets you cycle the weapons back on, which is fantastic. There's another Dothraki that lets you draw when attachments leave play if you stand in influence location. So Targ has definitely got a whole bunch of tools that made attachments better, but they were always the house that had the most bang for your buck out of attachments.
I think I actually went back and listened to our last talk about this as preparation. It's episode 34 of season 1 if you want to listen it. But in that we discussed a few ways that FFG could make attachments better, and we hit up the possibility of enters play and leaves play effects, and also protection, like attachments granting protection to the characters that they go on. And so I think it's great that we've suggested all that stuff, and none of that is why attachments have become great.
So some of it they've tried, though. There's that new attachment that's, you know, makes all characters without attachments lose keywords, for instance. It's pointless. It's a terrible card. But it's an attempt at trying.
I suppose. As Alex mentioned, he mentioned the Braided Warrior. And what I like about the Braided Warrior specifically is that it offers a tutor effect. And there's a fair few tutor effects that have turned up in the last cycle or two. And those help out a lot with regards to toolboxing and attachments of stupendously good cards for toolboxing, because they can provide one advantage attachments obviously have over events beyond being harder to cancel is that the boosts they provide tend to be more long term. So if you incinerate someone, they lose the strength of that phase. If you flame kiss them, they lose it until they leave play. I mean, granted, that's a poor example because often they'll leave play the moment you flame kiss them, but same principle. So with, for example, the Time for Wolves plot. This lets you get a creature card and put it into your hand, or if it's a Direwolf card, put it into play. And a lot of the best Direwolf cards are attachments. So as well as giving you a free card, as the point Alex made earlier, this also means that you can run several different Direwolf attachments as a one copy of it, and then fetch whichever one you need at that time. Maybe you think your opponent's going to Valor, you fetch an Ymiria. If you see your opponent has Sam Tali in play, then you can fetch Greywind. Right. And it lets you toolbox your deck a lot more than if you had to use events in the same slots.
What I find the nicest part of both that and the Braided Screamer is the fact that it reduces the cost of the attachment a well. Because Braided Screamer, you can go get that out-of-house attachment that would normally cost you 3-4 gold and end up paying 1 or 2 gold for it instead. And there's big savings there.
But it's not just the savings. I mean, they're competing with event slots. But if you can run singletons, you can get a much greater variety, and you're still not clogging up your non-setup slots. much more advantage while there's basically no event search or almost no event search in the game. I would say that the first time I started looking at attachments again was task plots because they allowed you to get things like Sandsake Veil. And again, you can go look for specific utility and you don't necessarily have to run three of them in your deck. And I think that makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I think one other small benefit that attachments offer is, and it's perhaps a more subtle one, is the fact that they have house affiliations. Obviously, the neutral ones don't, but this ties into what we were saying about the task plots, is you cannot fetch an event, like an out-of-house event from a task plot, whereas you can fetch an out-of-house attachment from a task plot. Or, like, for example, in Baratheon, there's Melisandre's Favor, which steals a character into a dominance. There's Flame and Shadow as an event that steals a character into a dominance. But Melisandre's Favor is the one that's restricted. And partly that's because one of them's prized and costs influence. But it's also the fact that you can recur the Melisandre's Favor with Dale Seaworth, and you can reduce the cost to play Melisandre's Favor with Seat of Power. And you can't do those things with Flame and Shadow, because it's not a Baratheon card. It's a neutral card that has a House Baratheon-only deck-building restriction.
Yeah, the ability to, like you were saying, tutor for these attachments is what sets them apart from events, for sure.
Now, I remember back when I started playing, and I was listening to this this podcast. It was 2C1C. At the time, Two Champs and a Chump. At the time, actually had Two Champs and a Chump. And they at one point had said something like, oh, this card has no attachments. That's a good keyword. And as a beginner, I thought, no, that sounds terrible. No attachments is this limiting thing where you can't, you know, make your card better.
Oh, and, sweet summer rabbits. You
know, exactly. I certainly learned since then. And anyone that hadn't learned very quickly with Mel's Favor that no attachments was a good thing.
Yes.
But I think that...
No attachment but weapon is a better thing.
No attachments but weapon, exactly.
What about fishing net and poison coin?
I'm worried about those tremendously. No, I'm not. Yet.
Yet. But yeah. I think Mel's Favor also did a lot to keep attachments in the public perception. And even with its restriction, it's still seeing a lot of play. And a lot of people who may have decided, okay, I might not include Mel's Favor, are now more willing to put attachments because they've seen that they can be useful in these categories. I still don't think that means we were wrong in episode 34. I think it's inherently the weakest card type. I just think it's seeing a resurgence because we're giving it to people for free, almost.
Well, that's what I was kind of saying earlier. We haven't changed the power of attachments. What we've changed is the ability to fetch them, the ability to reduce their cost. But attachment cards themselves, like, you're not playing any new attachments from these last packs. You're using the old ones. You're still using, you know, like you were saying, the Ravens. You were using Flame Kissed. And these are the attachments that have been there forever. And Mel's Favor, you know, it's newer, but it's been around. It's not a new idea. It's just the fact that we can reliably get them, that we can play fewer of them in our deck, so it takes up less precious slots, and still get them when we need them. I think that's what really has changed, and the fact that event becomes, you know, marginally more bad.
Yeah, I mean, given that I am a contrary person and therefore hate Sky Cell and don't think it'll see any play, I can't think of an attachment from this cycle that has interested me.
Now you're going to make me look at the list of attachments from this cycle.
Off the top of my head, there's that the terrible Dothraki and Bloody Scourge that you referred to earlier. There's the Lannister one that increases your draw cap if you're no agenda.
There's the Greyjoy one that's actually probably the best one that lets you kill characters when you win challenges with four more.
It would be if it wasn't a limited
there
response.
There was Marjorie's Favor and in Renly's Name and Kettle Drum. None of
all that.
I could. In fact, Time for Wolves had no attachments in it at all, apparently. The Veilmen had no attachments in it at all. A Deadly Game had no attachments in it at all.
Well, anyway, this is why there weren't any attachments.
Proof is in the pudding.
there was Hoda's Axe, which is not terrible.
But not great.
But not stellar, yeah.
So it's not going in over your Venomous Blades or all these other great Murtal attachments, like Taste for Blood and... You know.
Yeah, one other point I was going to make about the playability of attachments is that any house has access to the ways of cancelling events. You know, obviously, there's Harrenhal, Hall, but there's also Royal Favor, there's Paper Shield, there's the Hand's Judgment. There's a lot
Royal
of...
Royal Favor, you mean Royal Decree?
Sorry, Royal Decree. Yeah, there are a lot of neutral cancels for events, whereas if you want to be able to hate attachments, you'd better have a Stark house card or a Targaryen house card. And otherwise, you're probably out of luck.
Yeah, you're not even playing the old good Crescent, because the new Crescent's better.
Yeah, Baratheon, the only way Baratheon can deal with attachments is what, to steal the card they're attached to?
Well, Martell does have Ghastly Grave, which is a way to strip attachments.
Yes. Yeah. Which goes back to the controlling the character rather than the attachment.
Yes.
And every house can play some plots that can deal with attachments.
The Raven's Message is actually quite popular, yeah.
Yeah.
Although it doesn't do that well against Skycell.
No, but it's good against other types of attachments.
What this issue of, we came up with these suggestions of how to improve attachments, and attachments have become strong by themselves, has led me to worrying about is the suggestions we came up with as far as attachments, sort of, you know, removing that two-for-one bite to them. FFG have since announced they are doing for second edition.
Mm-hmm. They've announced that they're allowing setup, and that when the card that they're attached to leaves play, they'll return the hand.
So what I want to ask you is, if the overall climate of the game is similar to first edition, that is, we're getting sort of tutor effects. I mean, we've already seen a plot spoiled that tutors, admittedly for characters, not attachments, but mm-hmm. we've already seen that that's a route they're willing to take. If we see cancel cards for events that are neutral, if, you know, attachment hate becomes the purview of one or two houses, or factions rather, sorry, then are we going to get a situation in second edition where attachments are too strong in comparison to events?
You just named, like, five ifs. If we get the search, if there's lots of cancel, if attachment hates only in two houses.
I mean, I can't imagine an LCG called a Game of Thrones where that's currently the case.
It is currently the case, but I would hope that FFG, like, they've been announcing, they've learned from this game, and they're going to put something forward that's not going to have all those ifs and therefore make attachments too powerful.
Yeah, I mean, they may make attachments more powerful, and as you're saying, relative to events, that may well be the case, but will events be the right comparison for them now? Given that they'll stick around longer, and that if a character leaves play, you get the attachment back, you still have to pay the cost again, but that these are longer-term presences unless you deal with them directly, presumably, wouldn't they be comparing more to locations?
It's a very good point.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think attachments and events are supposed to have an effect on the board, while locations provide income, and in some cases, like the Scourge, et cetera, do provide an effect on the board. But I think generally people compare events and attachments because they're non-setup in 1.0. In 2.0, they're both probably going to cost gold, it seems. One of them can be played. Maybe you don't have a comparison to events.
At first glance, I would say that maybe what we need to be comparing them to are locations, and say both of them are likely to stick around. One requires that I pay the gold cost again to play it if I lose the character they're attached to. But they'll both, I assume attachments will tend to modify the characters, while the locations will tend to modify the board in more global ways. But, you know, I think that will be the comparison. I think that's hard to say. Surprising, right? That's what we would hope events are.
Because, I mean, a lot of times locations, you have to kneel it to trigger an effect. It allows you to pick a target of that effect that can change while an attachment, whatever it's attached to, is normally the target of that effect.
That's true.
And it doesn't change a lot. So, yeah, I can see your point that they're both on the board, but they seem like very unique card types. You know what? And I think that's good. I think it's good that 2.0, from this little discussion we're having, is going to give us these unique flavors to cards that you're not going to be able to do a direct comparison between two card types and say, oh, they're similar, they're just, you know, got a different trait.
I completely agree. I mean, when, I don't know about you guys, I'm guessing it's the same, but when an attachment comes out in first edition, especially one that doesn't have the setup keyword, my immediate thought is, okay, well, in the deck this is meant to go in, what event am I dropping for this? Whereas in second edition, hopefully it will be, okay, well, I'm already running five or six attachments, or maybe even more. What attachment am I dropping for this? And hopefully we'll be able to sort of treat attachments as their own card type rather than sort of a subset of events.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. Or a subset of locations. Like, they'll be unique, the same way characters are now and that locations are and those other cards.
and those other cards.
We group them all together right now, right? Deck building, that's what we do. We
say, I think plots still stand out as being very different.
Oh, okay. I meant your core deck. We do, you know, everyone says 30 characters, you know, 12 to 15 locations, and then the other cards.
All right. Well, thank you very James. Thank you very James.
Thank you very James to you too, Alex.
Thank you very James. Closing comments, John. This is normally the part where I'd list off a bunch of regionals. There are two in Spain, one in Zaragoza and one in Barcelona. And then there's one in Sweden, in Varberg, and one in France. So this is the only four I know of. I think there are none in North America this coming weekend. I think we're going to do a little something different here. We're going to offer viewers, if we had any viewers, we'd offer them a choice too.
But we'll offer listeners a chance to decide if we should air on Mondays or Tuesdays going forward so that we can also comment on these articles that seem to be coming out every single Monday.
This would still be a temporary solution. Plan wouldn't be to do it long term. I mean, it could be, you know, basically tell us if next week's episode should come out on Monday and include regional news and stuff as usual, but not include whatever article is coming out on that Monday, or whether we should do Tuesday so that the article is fresh in people's mind and in our mind and we can get that cast up for you guys. So let us know in the comments of the Card Game DB article, and we'll just see what the totals run up, and we'll go with that. So either airing on Monday or airing on Tuesdays. It's up to you guys. Thank you for listening to Beyond the Wall. If you have any comments or would like to be featured on the cast, please let us know by email at beyondthewallpodcast@gmail.com or through Facebook at Beyond the Wall Podcast. If you've enjoyed the music, check out more of Antti Martikainen's work at the link embedded in the chapter data. See you all next week. You guys.
Oh, Jesus. Sorry, guys. My wife just jumped out at me and scared the crap out of me.